Craig.
Hey, how about them Sounders?
I know, we're recording this a little bit later than normal because we watched the end of the Sounders match. I'd like to say sorry to my friend. What's his handle on Twitter? Green CPA, right, Brian?
Yeah.
My buddy Brian. Yeah, sorry, buddy. You're still tied with us at the top of the table, and we've got a game in hand, so my bad. Just imagine how that game would have gone if we had Rui Diaz.
Yeah.
I don't know.
He'll
probably say, just imagine how it would go if we had Sebastian Blanco.
Welcome to Nos Adietes.
A Sounders podcast for Cougar fans.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah,
we could also talk about, let's see, Dortmund lost in the Champions League, but Tottenham kicked ass today in the Europa League.
Yeah.
Europa like, football.
Yeah, really equal match right there. Feel great about it. Feel great they didn't lose.
Yeah.
So this is Podcast Versus Everyone, a WSU Cougars podcast.
Wait, what? Am I on the right show? I don't know. What are we doing?
But we're going to talk about our teams, the Sounders. Hey, let me throw it back. The Rain finally got a win in their last match of the year. That was awesome.
Nice. That was nice. Man. They've had a bit of a rough go of it for sure. It's hard when you don't have your best player all season. That makes it hard.
She hasn't played for like 2 years.
Yeah, she's like unofficially retired.
One of your other best players who missed all of last year is now on loan. Yeah. It's whatever.
Europe. Yeah. To the parent club.
Like many of the good players from NWSL. Which I can't blame them. Let's see. What else? I'm Craig Powers. With me.
Yes, you are.
Is Jeff Neusser.
Hey, that's me.
I'm feeling pretty united today with you, Jeff.
Yeah, you are. We all are, right? So it is our United campaign week, or definitely not Unit 3D week, but United week with a 3 in there. See how we did that?
Yeah. The 3 is an E.
Yeah, the 3 is an E, except backwards, right?
Yes.
Get it? Does everybody get it now? It's our United for Helsinki's Hope week. This is the week when we team up with CougFan.com. And also with Butte Brand, which you would find at ButteBrand.com, run by and co-owned by our good friend Britton Ransford, who used to write for Coug Center and doesn't anymore, but is definitely still a good friend and near and dear to our website and everything else. So we're once again selling T-shirts and hoodies to raise money for Helsinki's Hope. Hence the 3. And we came up with the United thing a couple of years ago thinking, and this was actually the brainchild of me and Greg Witter, one of the co-founders of Coug Fan. He and I have become friends and, we're chatting and we had become friendly with the Helsinki's and, we were just like, man, we got to do something for Helsinki's Hope. And so Greg and I, we kind of kicked around some ideas and we said, what if our websites, teamed up and did some kind of campaign. And so we found a website that does shirts, basically does custom shirts for charitable causes. And we raised a bunch of money that first year. And then last year and Britton did the design for it at the time, although we didn't do, I don't even know if Butte Brand existed yet or if it was like kind of in its infancy or something. Last year, then talked to Britton again and he was like, hey, I was thinking about the idea of involving Butte Brand in this. And I was like, oh, that's perfect. That's awesome. So we did it through Butte Brand with their lovely, comfortable shirts and hoodies.
Yeah. Much more high quality than that.
It's the really nice, like tri-blend t-shirt, right? Nice and soft.
Yeah. I'm excited for this like French Terry hoodie. It sounds just like,
I know, Sarah.
Lovely.
I didn't, because I'm always leery of hoodies that I don't know. Like I always feel like I have to try on a hoodie before I order one because the way my body, we'll just say that hoodies are sort of a constant, give and take.
Well, I'll say in your defense, like I picked up a they had some like polyester. I love polyester hoodies, and they had a like a Kraken hoodie for a good deal, obviously at Costco.
Because they don't shrink, man.
Yeah, I know.
That's only buy those kinds of hoodies these days.
Well, I just like the way they feel too. But but so they don't shrink, but so I bought one of those, and I got it home. Extra large is usually my size in hoodie. That's usually long enough for my arms and stuff. Man, it's too short. And I got to take it back. But so I don't know. I'm usually the non-polyester hoodies are almost pretty much always big enough for my arms. That's what I'm mostly worried about, you know, as a tall person.
Yep.
But I picked up the, you know, the South Carolina colored hoodie, the black one, and then a gray WSU colored shirt. I think it's cool. They have the South Carolina colors, obviously. South Carolina has embraced the Helinskys and Helinski Hope. We saw them do the really cool the three in between the third and fourth quarter last year, or was it halftime? I can't remember. But like it, their fans have embraced that, and so it's cool that they're offering the South Carolina colors. And I love a black hoodie always, so I went for that one. But I'm excited. You know, I was excited when Britton took it over because it just like the gear is better.
Yes,
I mean,
yes,
and, it and it's for roughly the same price that we were charging the other, the original one.
Yep.
And you know, we're getting the same amount of donation back to the Helinskys. And it's great, and makes me feel good about what we do, that we can be a part of that in some way.
Yeah, so it's fantastic. So the shirts again. I'll throw the link in the show notes, and also at if you happen to find this episode on Coug Center, you'll find it there as well. We've kind of got plastered all over the site right now, but so the t-shirts are going for $30.03. Get it? $30.03. The hoodies are $45.03, and every item that you buy of United Gear, $10 goes back to Helinski's Hope. So it's not just $10 per order, it's actually $10 per item. So for example, in my family, we ordered 5 because I bought a t-shirt for me, a hoodie for my wife, a t-shirt for each of my children. That's 5 items. $50 went back to Helinski's Hope. And so that's how that works. And then also Butte Brand will donate $2 from any other Butte Brand purchases that you have at the same time as that. So if you want to, you know, pick up some other gear at the same time.
Some nice hats.
You can. I mean, I'm going to tell you legitimately, you know this because you've seen me wear the hat. Like I have a Butte Brand hat that is one of my favorite hats, and I wear it all the time because it's like super comfortable and it looks pretty nice. And it goes with most anything because it's kind of red, white, and blue. Like it's got a blue bill and a red, or maybe it's a red bill. Red bill, blue, blue kind of crown, and then white mesh in the back. And it's a handsome hat, man. So any of that stuff you buy is $2 good gear. And it's, you know, Coug owned, which is always a good thing as well. So stock up on some of that cool stuff. And all that money is going to go back to Helinski's Hope.
I got that Alpine orange and blue one that's similar to your hat.
For my
brother-in-law, and he's been doing it because he's doing a van trip where they're going to all national parks. So I was like, dude, you can wear this. I know like Britton loves when people wear their gear when they're out in like nature. So he's been doing that, and he's literally like that leather patch is like worn down, like where you have to like wipe it down to see the logo again. So he's
fantastic.
He's gotten good use out of it. So good hats, comfy hats. I have one that I don't see on here anymore. So I get the limited edition, you know.
So as of our recording, we are up over $1,900 raised of a $5,000 goal. So that's where we're at. So if you haven't yet supported the United campaign with a purchase of a shirt or a hoodie, go ahead and go do that. That'd be awesome. If you're seriously just like, I don't need another shirt or a hoodie. Okay. Totally understood. If you go to the Coug Center website and find, the post, there's a link there to, donate directly to Helinski's Hope. So if you do that, send us an email either to the podcast email, or you can send it to KookCenter@gmail.com. Either one. Let us know if you donated so that we can add that to the total of how much we've raised. One person already did that. So somebody sent me an email, said they donated $133 and wanted me to add that to the total.
Very
so,
nice.
Yeah, it was super, super cool. So that's all available to you. If you're still not convinced, well, guess what? Guess what, Craig? You can probably guess.
I'm guessing you have someone that can maybe convince them.
Yeah, I have someone that might be able to convince you. So before Craig and I started recording here, I was able to get Mark Kalinske on the line and interview him for about 30 minutes talking about United, but also Helsinki's Hope and the things they're doing and where your money's going and all that kind of stuff. So we'll get to that interview in just a sec. But yeah, if you were sort of on the fence, like, I don't know, man, I bought a t-shirt last year. Should I buy another one this year? Or you're like, I don't know, I donated the first year. Isn't that enough? After you listen to Mark, you will probably feel like a bad person if you don't buy a t-shirt or donate. I'm just going to be very honest. Not that that's what Mark was trying to make you feel like, because Mark is legitimately one of the nicest people on the planet. And he certainly would not want to make you feel that way. But I am going to tell you that you will probably feel that way.
Yeah. I haven't heard it, but I believe you. I've seen,
I wasn't trying to set you up for that.
Yeah.
I wasn't trying to put you on the spot there, buddy.
But yeah, obviously, I'm sure many of our listeners have seen Mark on ESPN and in other places. So, but this will be 30 minutes just of just him chatting, telling his story, which maybe you've heard, but maybe you haven't heard it directly from him. So
yeah, and not only that, but part of what we touch on in the interview is like just what they've been able to accomplish over the last couple of years, and just how much the foundation has grown. And so that was kind of the part that I really wanted to drive home. Not really drive home. That's too strong. But just I really wanted to make sure people heard was that they're doing stuff. Like they're not. You know, they haven't just collected money and kind of tried to figure things out. You know, they are legitimately doing stuff, and it's awesome. And it's really, really cool to hear Mark talk about it directly. So with that, should we get on to that interview?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay. All right. I'm here with Mark Kalinske, father of Tyler and also Ryan and Kelly. And, one of the people working on Helsinki's Hope, along with his wife, Kim. And Mark, what's up? How you doing?
Jeff, great to see you. Great to hear from you. I'm helping the brains behind Helsinki's Hope. There's no question. I wish she could be here. Her battery sort of runs down around 10 o'clock. So we're...
Yeah. Yeah, I know she's the early riser out of the two of you, for sure.
No question.
And then it's like, and then she just, you know, she goes so hard. And then it's done. So
exactly.
I know how that, I'm kind of that way too. Like that's why I drink 8 cups of coffee. So anyway, what's that?
Or a growler of the new brew that was so good. I didn't get to hear how that turned out. I was following up, do you know what I'm talking about? I should know the brewery. They created one for instead of the the Maple Valley Open.
Georgetown. Tournament.
Georgetown. Yeah. Sorry, Georgetown Brewery. Yeah.
Yep.
The guys are awesome, and it looks like they were having so much fun.
Yeah, we've talked about them on the podcast a bunch of times because. So as you know, Tristan is a cancer survivor and one of the foundations that they work with is the Good Times Project, which is a foundation for helping kids who have cancer and cancer survivors. And, it's summer camp is kind of their big deal, but they do a whole bunch of other stuff too. And, so Georgetown does a beer for them every year where the proceeds go to support Good Times. And of course, Georgetown was super huge when Pearl Jam was out here a couple of years ago, did a special beer, which is actually a really, really good beer, raised a ton of money for homelessness in Seattle. So yeah, Georgetown does some really, really, really cool stuff, including supporting Helsinki's Hope through Ian Furness's mayor of Maple Valley Open. And you guys are, God, it's like every time that I kind of, and of course I follow Helinski's Hope on Twitter and I, you know, talk with you and Kim periodically and you know, just kind of, but it's like, I am constantly amazed by, you know, how much you guys have accomplished in such a short amount of time, and including, I guess, most recently, 3-day and the Mental Health Awareness Week and all that stuff. You know, why don't you talk a little bit about that the 3-day, the Mental Health Awareness Week, the all the reach that you guys got with that and all the traction that you got, because it's a fairly incredible thing that you guys got off the ground.
You're, as always, you're very kind. And, you know, as we've talked many times, this is only possible with the support of you know, the guys that started with us early on in the Pacific Northwest, and, you know, Coug fans and UW fans alike, you know, down to Oregon and out to the middle of the country. I mean, it's been just a real honor to work on their behalf. And I think that's how we think about it. It's always for Tyler and it's always for our student athletes. And it is a lot of work and it's very gratifying. We wish, you know, somebody else were doing it for a different reason and all of that. But at the same time, we're sort of blessed to be able to make a difference. And that's what we always wanted to do and try to prevent anybody from suffering in silence. So, yeah, the you know, it's and Jeff, you know me too well, but all these things are long stories. But the short version of 3-day and College Football Mental Health Week really was, we had this young guy, young man up in Toronto, Canada, who was a college football fanatic, and he happened to be a Gamecock fan of all things, South Carolina Gamecock fan. And so he would send little edits, you know, these kids are so good with technology and they do these cut ups, and he was sending a couple to Ryan, and Ryan gets a lot of that stuff, particularly last year. But you know, right as COVID was starting to happen, Ryan sent me one. And he said, "Dad, you got to look at this. This guy, he's really good." And then what he did is he's the thought process behind 3-day. What I'd really love to do is get a video out there that shows the teams putting a giant 3 on one side of their helmet. And so everybody knows we're thinking about Tyler and we're thinking about, you know, our student athletes and what they might be suffering from, and knock down the stigma. I mean, he was just on it. And so he sent us this thing, and, you know, to speed up the story, we took that, and that great idea, we polished up the video. We got Jen Lotta from ESPN to do the voiceover, and she's just adorable and smart and so good at what she does, but just extremely generous. And she was part of the Helinski Hope feature for E60, and she, you know, that was one of her deals. She's the one, in fact, she and Russell won the Denalio won the Emmy for that feature. So she's done a lot of great stuff for Helinski's Hope. So we were excited about that. You know, we said, well, what really could we do? And what happened, Jeff, is it was really geared towards October 3rd, right? The beginning of the week before, and NAMI and some other groups, you know, sort of everybody has a week or a day that's sort of spoken for. And we were sort of claiming 3-day. And the problem was, we said, we don't want to do it once. We want to do it all the time. And so the numbers didn't line up, you know, as the calendar changes and stuff. So we kind of got really bold and said, I'm going to send this letter to the athletic directors. I'm going to start in the SEC. And if it falls on deaf ears, that's okay. You know, we'll do 3-day. It'll be great. Well, we asked them to participate. By participating, you put it, you know, one of the emblems on the back of the helmet, the decals, very much like cancer awareness was and is. You know, you saw Deion Sanders with his pink socks and sweatbands and mouthpieces and stuff. So this is lime green for mental health awareness. So we did that, and we started something here that's now spread across the country, which is raising 3 fingers in the stands at football games right after the kickoff in the second half, so before the first play of the third quarter, first offensive play. and they take about 10 seconds and stand up. And Kim loves to say it's the loudest silence, you know, she's ever heard. And that's representing, yes, it's great for Tyler and Ryan's wearing number three too, but it's really the message is for everybody watching, everybody in the stands, the kids on the field, the coaches on the sidelines. We're here for you. You know, we get it. We know this is hard. We know that some of you are struggling, and this entire stadium is taking 10 seconds to acknowledge that. And so we sent this letter out to the athletic director and said, here's what we want you to do. Do one of those things, do something like that. Just let's stake a claim for college. We love college football. We think college football is awesome. And we think you guys should get credit for a lot of the work you're doing. And Jeff, I got 8 or 10 or whatever it was within a first week. They were just unequivocal. We're in, period. We'll figure out the details. We're in. Go do you. We love Holinsky's Hope. That kind of response. And that was so touching at the time. We just, I mean, from this would have been April, May, we've kind of been nonstop on that until we were able to kick it off on the 3rd and run it through the 10th of October. So thank you for asking about it. And it was really, there was really a grassroots deal that turned out to be, we have all the numbers, you know, so how you measure things, that over 3 or 4 million impressions and, you know, over $1 million in ad spend equivalency, you know, how they yeah. try, you know, all that stuff. But
yeah.
so the reach was great. The response was great. And then the schools that participated really, and then I'll shut up, but the schools that participated, what was really encouraging is not only did they do the, you know, sort of the minimum things we had asked or suggested, they did way more, right? They created their own PSAs. They used our PSAs. They created training programs and other things. And they made just a giant deal about it on campus and brought resources to bear for their student athletes. And we just, you know, with a very quick tear, we smiled and thought, well, that's, you know, these are some fabulous people doing this stuff. And so we were excited. We measured the success of College Football Mental Health Awareness 2020 by whether we could do it in 21. And we just announced that, and we're really excited to do it again next year.
I think one of like the really cool things about what you guys do, and you touched on that there, is that, you know, raising awareness obviously is an important piece. I mean, and the fact that, you know, I think just about every game that I watched that day, especially the 3rd, and also again on the 10th, but mostly on the 3rd, I think every broadcast mentioned it at some point as well, that it was, you know, college football mental health, you know, week, and, you know, they show close-ups of the stickers. And I was just like, wow, that's like, that's amazing. But there's, you know, there's also a tendency, I think, with a lot of, and it's not like to throw shade on anybody or anything else. I'm not trying to be critical, but sometimes sort of awareness is where it ends. And it's like, hey, look at our ribbon. Okay. You know, and then that's kind of the end of it. And so, you know, one of the things that you touched on there was that, you know, some of these campuses really kind of put things into action even one step further. And I know that, like, for you guys, when we're, you know, raising money to support you guys, like we are right now with Coug Center and Coug Fan and Butte Brand, and we're working to, you know, sell t-shirts and hoodies and solicit donations and all this stuff to support Holinsky's Hope. And, you know, sometimes people can kind of be like, you know, where's my money really going? And one of the things I know about you guys is that, like, you're not, yes, awareness is important, but that's definitely not where it ends. And when we talk about, you know, where this money's going, it's really being invested into actionable items, things that really do put in place processes and procedures and people and staff and trainings and all kinds of stuff that legitimately can change people's lives.
Well, you bring up a bunch of good points. Let me see if I can unpack some of that stuff this way.
I know I talk too much, man.
No, you know, it's I enjoy it. You're a smart guy, and you really, there's a bunch of really important points in there. Let me start at the beginning. So awareness and awareness and stigma reduction are sort of nearly in the same bucket. And when we started this, the first thing we wanted to do was to go out and solve the problem. We didn't want another kid to die by suicide, period. And it's ambitious, and a lot of people think that way. But if you think about, if you compare it to physical illnesses and surgeries and orthopedic, you know, maladies and so forth, you don't start by, you know, cutting the leg open and looking for the problem. You know, what do? You get an appointment, you get your temperature taken and your weight and height, you get x-rays or MRIs and stuff. And surgery is really the last thing. And if you take that analogy a little bit to mental health, the work that's required in many cases, the really important work that you're referring to, and I'll talk about Helsinki's Hope Game Day in a second, is when the student athlete is talking to a counselor, or student athlete is talking to a doctor, or student athlete is talking to their family or friends about what they're going through, right? That's where it starts. That's the first step that Tyler never took. You know, just to personalize it, Tyler never took. So awareness, and I couldn't agree with you more. Awareness feels like, you know, sort of the ante. You know, you got to talk about it. It's been made aware. We've been aware of this for a long time, but it comes out this way. Mr. Linsky, we appreciate you guys coming out. We love the story. We love Tyler. We knew Tyler or people like Tyler. But the thing is, if my coach doesn't agree that mental illness is even real, nothing's going to change. Right. And we've heard that version of that story, and it could be, I can replace coach with university, with athletic director, with parents or whatever. And so awareness is actually much more critical than I even thought. Stigma reduction is equally or more so important, because if you have all the resources, and some of these schools are, as you mentioned, are stacked. I mean, they are doing some of the most amazing work. But if the kids don't avail themselves to that, or we can't find the kids that are unable, you know, brains are breaking out there, they're unable to ask for the help or get the help, then it doesn't matter, you know, what kind of car you're driving over there, or how many resources and how many doctors you have. Mm-hmm. If the kids don't get it, it doesn't do any good. So there is a balance. I would argue, or at least comment, that awareness and stigma reduction is equally important to the resource allocation on the backside. Now, having said all that, you're exactly right. Now we get a kid or kids or student athletes that need help and can't get it. They don't have, we have, you know, one half of one FTE at a school. We have three, you know, doctors of psychology at a different school. That's a problem, right? The caseload issues and wait times and lack of resources. And what we looked at, Jeff, is this, and to answer sort of the last point about where the money goes and what we're using it for, we looked at the NCAA has put a lot of effort and energy. Dr. Brian Hainline, their chief medical officer, has done a terrific job for a very difficult task to build these pillars in mental health and really the best practices. And they're not mandated. They're, you know, you should follow, but you don't have to. And we looked at those and we said, maybe we should build our own, or we should do research on what those really should be. But they're very solid. And so what we wanted to do was create, with evidence-based research, a program or tools that we could deliver to the universities where they could measure themselves, right? We have a scorecard that they can use internally. Here's the best practices as spelled out in actionable items. Here's how you can get to that. Two, we have a facilitator handbook. So, you know, 100 pages of really evidence-based research ways to conduct your business. We've had schools, you know, nameless, doesn't matter. Big schools that don't know where to start, right? Talk about resource allocation. They have enough of a budget. They need to do it the right way. What's the footprint look like? And so we wanted to make sure we had all those tools, because building a large nonprofit with doctors and you know, the logistics that goes with that wasn't practical or feasible. But we thought what we could do is really do sort of a Helsinki's Hope certification program, if you will, and say, we know what you're supposed to have. You know what you sort of know, but let's put that on paper. Let's do the research. And so we've spent the last year and a half, almost 2 years now, with Dr. David Weirich and his team at the University of North Carolina at Greensboro. And they helped us create Helsinki's Hope Game Plan, which is sort of just as I described, right? This is a tool set, evidence-based research created tool set that schools can get. And with COVID especially, but even before, we're making that available to schools at either very little cost or no cost in some cases, right? We're really making sure as many student athletes can get to that as possible. And I think everybody, and if we have said it once, we'll say it 100 times. We don't exist without the love and support, you know, of our Cougs, the guy, everybody in the Pacific Northwest, yes, and UW, and all the guys up there. And we've created a nearly similar thing here in the Southeast. And we're so proud of the people that recognize, that buy into this and that understand it. And we're just touched and honored that they support us in that way, because it's, you can't do this without resources. And so you're absolutely right. It's always a fair question. And I think Kim and I have always erred on the side of, you know, being extremely judicious with that spending, but also knowing that you have to do that to get people the help they need. And so that's the plan. That's the game plan we announced on October 6th. That's available. We're starting that process here. COVID be damned as we go into 2021. So thanks for asking. And you know, it makes me smile. You know, I don't smile a lot, but knowing that we're able to get to that point in the surgery where we know what we're doing, you know, and it's not just trying to do good. We actually spent a lot of time, effort, and resources on doing it the right way.
Well, it's been like super cool for me to watch you guys develop this. So like, I don't think I've ever talked about this before on the podcast, but you and I connected before, you know, all of this happened. And we had connected through, you know, something I wrote on the website, and Mark, you know, sends me an email, hey, do you have time to talk? And I'm thinking, oh God, you know, like, what does he want to talk to me about? I wrote a thing about his son.
No, but,
right. And, but you know, so our, you know, relationship, you know, goes back a little bit, and then watching, you know, as how you guys have, you know, both you and Kim have navigated, all of this, and really watching how, you know, your commitment to, you know, trying to make sure this doesn't happen again, like you said, that's kind of the big goal, right? Is, you know, don't let this happen again. And, you know, I know that, you know, a lot of times people have, you know, good intentions and they want to do things. I mean, I'll even share, you know, for me, like we, you know, Tristan was, you know, sick with leukemia, and we, you know, got all these, you know, some of these experiences. A big one was Make-A-Wish. And, you know, so we do the Make-A-Wish, and we're just so thankful for Make-A-Wish. And so we do a whole bunch of stuff with Make-A-Wish, you know, shortly after, you know, Tristan was sort of like on the back end of this thing and kind of out of the woods. And, you know, so we kind of do all this, and we're really passionate about it, you know, for a time. And then, you know, after a while, it's, you know, it kind of fades. We didn't really have a big plan for, you know, Make-A-Wish, and, you know, we kind of worked with them. It's been amazing to me to watch you guys, you know, take this idea that you had, and watching all of these kind of, pieces come together, and watching the building blocks. 'Cause I remember, you know, I don't know, it was 2 years ago, I think, when you guys kind of started up with, Step Up and Behind Happy Faces, and, you know, started working through that, you know, and I'm interviewing Kim about that, and just kind of seeing how those pieces are kind of coming together as part of your game plan. You know, now you got, I mean, geez, you guys got a book, right? You got a trainer book. Like, it's like, it's really neat to see the way that you guys have really focused that energy, into something that is, sustainable and is, the kind of thing that's coordinated. And like you said, it's data driven. It's designed to, you know, help the athletes, like, kind of learn about themselves, learn about each other. And then you collect data, and you check on the efficacy, and then you, if you need to, you circle back around again. And, you know, it's really education put into, I think, the best possible use. And so whenever anybody, you know, buys a shirt or makes a donation or any of the stuff that we're doing right now during this campaign, I mean, it's fair to say, right, that money directly goes to getting this program onto campuses, which then in turn, hopefully directly affects, you know, the mental health of those students, and hopefully prevents, you know, another tragedy.
No, the money that the great supporters of Helsinki's Hope can very proudly say they're saving lives. And you know me a little bit. I mean, I'm extremely uncomfortable with that, because it sort of seems like you're keeping score, right? But you have to measure your successes and your outcomes and your failures and adjust and move on. And we've absolutely done that. And there's, you run any kind of business, you with the great support again of our vendors and our partners. But we didn't spend a lot of time, and you know this. I mean, we're two partners in. We've partnered with the NCAA, right? We made a point of finding a way to work with them. And they've been great partners. We're going to expand that relationship. But we didn't want to go and brand everything that we possibly could. We didn't want to just raise money for money's sake. We pay for the speakers, we pay for the trainers. There's expenses that go with that, and I think people absolutely understand that. But what they don't get to hear, and I love the opportunity to really kind of just give you one example, but what they don't get to hear is this. What Kim and I do, our journey in this is to tell what we call, it's a Tyler talk. We tell Tyler's story. And the reason we do that is we give a bunch of examples. We show a video. They'll be happy to know, the Cougs anyway, that we, part of that is rewatching pieces of the Boise State win. But in all seriousness, what's really important about it is the face of suicide doesn't look like, it to most people, doesn't look like Tyler. It doesn't look like a smiling kid in a helmet playing for his team, respecting his coaches, loving his friends, leading a group of guys and being led by a group of men. That doesn't look like suicide to most people. And what we want everybody to hear is, if this can happen to Tyler, it can happen to anybody. This is not a scare game. We're not trying to frighten anybody. What we're trying to do is pop the top off of this and go, look, everybody's susceptible. There's no color, race, creed. There's no a that we're focused in this lane of student athletes. I get it. We do get that sometimes, but that's not to exclude anybody. That's to be, you can't boil the ocean. We've got to focus on a task and make a difference. We have student athletes as our kids. Tyler was a student athlete, so we're focused there. But here, so we give a talk as Tyler talk. We've done now, Jeff, we've done over 160 and live, and we did 40 Zooms here in the last, maybe more than that now. Kim's keeping track. So over 100 of these talks, and what that is about an hour's worth of presentation to tell you a little bit about what happened, including the things that we know and the things that we don't know. And without giving that talk in our chat today, the outcome of that, the end of that is to simply say, we love you guys. We are supported by people, across this country that are doing that. The $3 we get, the $13, the $33, every penny of that is because they care, they love you, and they're doing it maybe with their friends and family in mind, or people that they know in their communities. But let me tell you, they're doing it for all of us. So the bigger, I don't want to overcomplicate this, but the bigger sort of arc here is, the world has to be a slightly kinder place. We have to allow for differences. We have to be able to have conversations, and we can't frighten people with rhetoric and non-science about what's going on here. We're losing 123 people to suicide every day, and it's far too much. There's not a 21-year-old where suicide is the best option to whatever they're struggling with. So we do these talks, and inevitably, whether it's the next day, whether it's during the talk, after the talk, or months later, we will get, and we just did this here in South Carolina, our one of our very first after COVID, although it's not over, I don't mean like that, live events. We went and talked to a group of students here at Division II school. And what we said is, use Tyler's story. If you're uncomfortable, if you don't know how to ask for help, here's the, we try to give this advice. We're not, as you know, we're not mental health experts. We're not public speakers, but we simply say, it's very, this is the way you do it. I was at this thing. I had to listen to this big fat guy cry about his kid. Have you ever heard about Tyler? Tyler, he's this nice kid up in Washington, took his own life, and no one knew why. that you can do, right? That is not a lot of stigma about talking to somebody else. And the left turn you make is, well, I identify with that. I feel like that. Mom, I'm having strange dreams. I'm worried about hurting myself or others, or that left-hand turn. And we always get, I mean, almost without exception, sometimes more than once, we'll get a follow-up email, call, text, instant message. Mrs. Zelensky, I did what you said. Oh, what would you do? Well, I talked about Tyler's story with my parents, and I told him that I was, struggling. 3 weeks later, he's in treatment. He's getting, the help he needs. He's not suffering in silence. You can't put a price on that, right? That if we did that one time, it would be worth it for everybody that supports Zelensky's Hope. But we're doing that 100 times a week, and maybe more than that a year. And that's what this is all about, as you said. If we can help somebody not suffer, a family, a community, a group of people, a team, a university, not have to suffer like we've suffered and WSU suffered and friends and family suffered, then that's what this is all about. And we don't win everyone, right? We haven't stopped suicide. We haven't stopped mental illness. What we think we've done is try to make it okay to talk about, okay to ask for help, okay to not be okay, not be ashamed of it. Nobody's afraid to tell you if they have cancer. Oh boy, that as they should. That's not embarrassing. You, as soon as Tristan was diagnosed, there's no doubt you just pulled the fences down looking for help. How do I get my son better? It should be
Yeah.
no different for a mental illness. And I think, it's hard to measure those things in the short time we've been doing this, but I think we're making inroads, and I think we're making a difference.
Yeah. Well, you definitely are. And I guess that's probably a good place to wrap it up. I just kind of, I mean, look, I think the world of you as a person, as a father, as a leader. What you guys are doing, I think, is incredible, both you and Kim. And yeah, whatever small part we can play in trying to help all that happen, we are thrilled to be able to do for you guys. So.
Well, if I could, just two quick things. First of all, my wardrobe is almost 100% United. I am the, and
I
this is
can
not a,
verify
you
that.
really can't. I'm wearing a sweatshirt inside my favorite hoodie, United hoodie, thinking this might have been a videotape. It's 100 degrees outside here in South Carolina,
Yeah.
but we love it. Not just because it's awesome and it's great clothes, and there's so many things about just the word and what it stands for and what Britain and you guys have done and enabled us to do that. Now we have a podcast that's, we have over 60 episodes. It's reaching, so many young student athletes. It's just amazing. I think we have 15,000 downloads now, or subscriptions, or however that's measured, and had a lot of success. And you see that three, and you see the slightly different designs, and you get the questions, and you get to be able to, share that story. I think it's incredible. The reason we're able to do this is support, but let it never forget us. Never, we don't forget, but it's certainly worth repeating. Tyler's contribution to society from age 21 to, when he naturally passed by some other disease process or old age, that hole in the universe is not even close to being filled by the work Kim and I are doing. And everybody associated with Helsinki's Hope and our support that we get from you guys. But that love doesn't go away. I still love Tyler. He's not here to get it. So I'm going to deploy it the best I can to Ryan and Kelly and Kim and they with us, but we're pushing that through Helsinki's Hope. And I think, that's impossible to measure except through the smiles and the tears and, the conversations like this that we get to have. But we're grateful for you guys. This is where it started. We'll always be, forever Cougs, and we'll be always be Pacific Northwesterners. And we're very proud to introduce you to the Southeast, because there's some incredible people here that took that lead and have grown it. So thank you so much, Jeff. As always, it's great to talk with you. Say hi to Sarah and the boys, and love to talk to you anytime.
I will do. Thanks, Mark. And we're back.
All right. Well, I'm I'm sure that was great and very emotional, but I'm going to lie. I wasn't listening because
you were not available.
I was not available during the thing. And you didn't sit here and play it for me.
No.
While we were on break, but,
Yeah, you'll listen to it later. You promise.
I will. I will. I'll listen to that part. I've kind of stopped listening to our podcast. I did it first, but I no longer.
I don't know when the last time was I listened to one of our podcasts.
Well, now it's bad because you know we get paid for the downloads, but I never listen to it, so the automatic download stops. It's like I'm not. I have to like remember to go manually download them sometimes, so I can.
Yeah, you
got to
make sure
myself,
put that penny in the bank.
Yeah, right? I got to get that 1/3 of a penny in the bank, baby.
Oh, well, let's see. Should we talk? Should we talk beer? Should we talk Cougs? Where do you want to start?
Well, yeah, I've been drinking a beer. Just having one. You know, I'm on a little bit of a diet, so.
Yeah, good man. You're better than me.
But yeah, what are you drinking, Jeff?
I am having the Stoop Fresh Hop Fiend.
Very good. Which
and
one?
It is the Chinook.
Nice.
It was canned on September 30th.
Pretty good.
So pretty recent. So yeah, welcome to Fresh Hop season when the annual harvest of one of our favorite ingredients makes us downright giddy. We're making
a lot of
Fresh Hop
beers
this season.
Oh, hops. Yeah,
hops. This label will stay the same, but the beer inside will change. Be sure to check the bottom rim of the can for the hop variety. So there we go. Yeah,
the most
so
recent,
Stoop Brewing with the skull made out of hops on the front of it. It's kind of cool, I guess.
I think it's a misfit. It's like a
that is what it looks like. That is true. Got it. Yeah. Yeah, it's good. Very West Coasty.
Definitely a West Coast IPA for sure.
Yeah.
I've had several variants of that.
Yep. Yeah, it's excellent. I like it.
Yeah, it's like the Misfit skull, and they made it
out
of hops.
That is what it looks like, yes.
Yeah.
Yep. So good.
But don't tell the Misfits that.
No. No. No.
I've had that. I will say the Mosaic version of that beer might be my favorite fresh hop beer of the season. And with the caveat that I didn't have a couple of my, you know, typical favorites just because I didn't make it up to Seattle to grab them. But like Hopfenkeller is usually one I really like, a varietal Holy Mountain collab. And then I didn't have any from Cloudburst. So they're usually making some of the best. So I didn't get to try those. But the Stoop, I love that base. I've had three of the variants and all of them were killer. Mosaic was probably my favorite. I haven't had the Idaho 7 one yet. That's the most recent one. But to very, very good beer, man. Like you made a good choice.
Yeah, it's a good one. I've had a lot of, man, there've been a ton of good fresh hop beers, that I've had. I had a good one last night. Level, it was a Level beer. They're fresh hop hazy.
Nice. So
that was super tasty, and I've got a varietal. It's my last freshie sitting in the fridge.
Which one is that?
I'm not sure. I know it's an Imperial IPA. I know that.
Oh, okay. I was probably like, if it's the Hopfenkeller, I'm going to be super jealous. It's just a Keller beer, which is like kind of a lager.
Yeah,
I love the fresh hop lagers and stuff.
Yeah. It's definitely not a lager. I know that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw it. The picture, I think I dropped it in the Slack. We did a little fresh hop festival last weekend with my sister and my mom.
Yeah, that was a lot of cans.
We went through, I think, 17 fresh hop beers. So. Between the four of us with Steph's boyfriend and me and my mom. And so it was we were able to crush through 17 cans. And my favorite was probably that Stoop Mosaic one. The other favorite winner from two of the other people, from my sister and her boyfriend, I think their favorite is the Rubens, Fresh Hop Double Crush, which is for the hazy IPA, just excellent. And you could probably still find it if you're listening to this, if you go to your bottle shops. I am also like, I was of the same mind. I was like, we have not, I don't think, talked about fresh hop beers, and fresh hop season is basically over at this point. So I have a fresh hop beer as well.
Woohoo! It's almost, if people are sick of listening to that, it's almost done.
Yeah.
We're almost there.
Yeah. But so I'm having a Fresh Wave from Structures. It's a double hazy IPA. This was brewed in collaboration with Browers and Bottle Works. They have kind of the same ownership, or they're kind of a partnership. They've started by the same people. Bottle Works is kind of the OG beer store in Seattle, still one of the best. You know, depending on who you ask, maybe the best still. There's so many good ones in Seattle at this point. But
yeah.
But yeah, so I when I went up to pick up some beer from Fremont, and Bottle Works is in Wallingford, so it's real close. And I did a nice big order of, you know, fresh hops and lagers and stuff, because right now they're only doing to-go orders. You order online, which is kind of fun, because, like, that's easy for me. I can just look online inventory rather than, like, staring at cases all, you know, case all the time. But so, yeah, I picked up this one. Structures, great brewery. They do hazy IPAs as well as anyone in the in the region, I would say. And this one is very good, very aromatic, you know, kind of tropical notes, good, you know, that good body you want from a hazy IPA, kind of the thickness that you're looking for. All around, very tasty. Definitely one of the top ones I've had. I would say in terms of a hazy double, like the Double Crush, I probably liked a little more. It was kind of it was kind of like this, had this like sweetness to it. It was so tasty. But either way, you can only get this one at Browers. At Bottle Works. I think you can get it at Browers too, but probably not to go. If you're looking to pick this one up, you gotta check out Bottle Works in Seattle. So Fresh Hop beers. All right. Sad to see them go. And also sad there was no Fresh Hop Fest this year. That was a bummer.
Maybe next year.
Whenever it doesn't align with the Cougar football game, I go, which is once out of every 4 years, it seems. But
yeah,
I went last year, and you went last year. And
it was a lot of fun. First time I went last year. It was awesome.
It's a blast.
It is. So much beer.
Go Yakima.
Especially when they don't collect your token. That's the best part.
We recorded an episode from Single Hill Fresh Hop Fest last year.
Yes, we did.
That's right. We drank it.
So we drank in the afternoon, and then we drank at night, and then we drank some more, and then I was too old and tired to keep drinking, and then dropped you guys off at some dive bar, and that was the end of my night.
McGuire's.
That's what it was.
The Irish pub that's in a double wide trailer. Gotta love it.
When I dropped you guys off, I was just thinking, like, are you guys sure?
I'm like, yeah, we go there all the time.
Seems a little sketch. I know you're from here, so obviously it must be okay. But
one of the staple bars in Yakima.
I don't know.
Like, with like the absolute worst house well drinks, like whiskey and vodka, like spirits, like you could possibly taste. Like they all, you can't really discern between any the whiskey or the rum or anything, they all just taste like ethanol. They are the worst. So of course you have to shoot them, because it's funny.
Otherwise, it's disgusting.
We got the shots. Me and Chris, like Amanda's brother, took him down. His girlfriend, now fiance, just sipped it real quick. And she's like, oh my God. And we're like, no, you cannot sip that. Like, this is not a sipping whiskey. This is just straight pate thinner. We're drinking pate thinner.
Yep.
It's good. This is serving a purpose. And that purpose is not for enjoyment on your taste buds. The purpose is to get you more buzzed and to make you feel, maybe add some chest hair. So,
yeah.
So Fresh Hops, baby.
Yeah. Woo-woo.
I would say highly recommend the Fresh Hop Festival in Yakima, but too many people go already, so don't go.
I know. Now just I'm like,
leave it to the rest of us, all right?
There is no way that we have that festival next year in any sort of similar iteration to what it was. Like, there's no way.
Unless we just stay, fuck it, just don't care.
It's just wall-to-wall people.
Covering, like, several city blocks.
Yeah, like... you know, just standing around drinking beer, like,
and then going, like, basically getting a beer, going, get in line, get another beer, get in line.
Listen, when I think of stuff like that, and it's kind of like when I watch, you know, when I watch highlights of games, you know, like from back when everything was normal, right? And I don't, has this happened to you, like, where you watch a highlight or something and the crowd is going bananas and they're like falling all over each other and it's just, you know, the house is sold out and like just everything's crazy.
Yeah.
And then you just watch that and like somewhere in the back of your mind, you're like, oh my God, I can't believe there's that many people there. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. Like that is like, that seems so abnormal now.
Yeah.
My brain cannot process anymore that many people that close together. Like I think back, like we were thinking about game day, right? Like that was this week.
Yeah.
The anniversary was this week.
There's like 25,000 people just crammed in a
Lawn. Into that space. I mean, I was, you know, right next to Kevin Dudley and my wife and Brian Floyd, and we were packed in there like sardines. And I mean, God, like I get anxious right now just thinking about it. I'm like, how did we even? I know there was life before a pandemic. I know there was life before there was a coronavirus. Like, I get that. But it's still.
Well,
like,
we've always had coronaviruses. Still,
we have, but not this one.
I know. I'm and just kidding. Like,
I know. Just so it's like, I don't know. Like, there's just a part of me that's just like, oh my God, I can't believe it. Like, I don't know. My brain is so fucked up now from all of this. Like, I can't believe there was a time when we were packed in like sardines and it was okay.
Yeah. It's pretty nuts, to think about, especially 'cause, you know, in where we live, people just, there's like no fans in the stadium still. Like other parts of the country, there's fans in some, there's like, you know, more and more. But here it doesn't look anytime soon they're going to allow fans. So just even going to a game seems wild at this point. I've gotten so used to just watching everything on TV. You know, we have Sounder season tickets. I have Cougar season tickets. You know, I was going to get Rain season tickets. I luckily I was hesitating and because I just, you know, didn't know what was going to happen. So sorry, I didn't give you my money, Rain. But, and then I had like, you know, like a multi-game pack from the Defiance and, you know, I planned on going to, you know, Mariners games and Rainiers games. And now it's just, you know, this huge part is gone, but now it's just like, I look back and I'm like, that was so weird that we did that. Like we were just so close to people all the time.
Well, like, do you ever think about the last game we went to?
Yeah. Yeah.
That like, I think about that all the time.
So I felt really weird.
We went to a Sounders game after we knew that the coronavirus was out there.
I think it was March 7th.
It'll be okay. Like, yeah, it was March 7th. And we were just like, you know, I think it's fine. I think we'll be okay. And now I look at it and I go, oh my God, I can't believe that.
Well, and it's not because the night before the Defiance match didn't allow fans.
Yeah.
The USL match. But then the MLS one did. And it was definitely kind of sparsely attended for a Sounders
match. For a Sounders game it was, but still.
But it I remember the guys in front of us turning to give us high fives.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
And I was just like, you know, like barely, you know, we were not wearing masks and all that stuff.
And I just remember thinking, like, we're kind of far from other people.
That,
like,
that was only,
yeah, you know.
Man, that was only 7 months ago.
I know. It's crazy. And it probably, honestly, at that point wasn't all that dangerous because there wasn't as much of the virus around. So,
yeah.
It probably, but still.
And we've like, kind of learned that. Outdoor event, like outdoor things aren't as bad.
Aren't as dangerous, yeah.
And honestly, if everyone was masked up, it probably would have not been an issue. Like,
yeah.
I'm kind of coming around to like, yeah, we could probably do like limited attendance and it'd be fine as long as it's the only thing that's the hard part is when people are leaving the stadium.
It's
and
the ingress, the it's the egress, it's the bathrooms, yeah. It's the concession stands. Like, I think those are more the issues.
Yeah, if you could like get people to be like, okay, section 242,
right. Your turn you to can go to leave the now.
Like,
can you imagine that if it was like
you have to have like a card that identifies what section that you're sitting in?
No, it was like the elementary school, like, okay, time for table one to go to the potty. Like, make sure to wash your hands. Okay, Miss Smith. Like, I don't know how else you do that, but Anyway,
if only we didn't have to get in and out of those places. Then it'd be
fine. Know, and you know, Pullman's even gone so far. So I don't know if you saw this morning. They're like begging people not to come to Pullman.
Definitely saw that. Yeah,
they're like, please, 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 don't come to Pullman. Stay home, please.
Please
stay home.
I follow Die Hard Cougs on Facebook just out of like morbid curiosity.
Yeah.
Got to keep in touch with the fans.
Yeah.
And there's definitely the people I know for a fact from posts on there, people are planning to go to Pullman. And I've seen it, like, they're like, to cheer on the Cougs. It's like, so you're going to watch it on TV from your hotel room? Like, if people want to go to Pullman, stay in a hotel room, stay socially distanced, just so you can support the businesses, that's fine. I don't care. Just don't be stupid about it. Like, don't try to park your RV because they're not going to let you.
They're not. They're actually like, basically what the school release said was, if they see your RV on campus, they're going to like tell you to leave. Like they are literally not. Now, what's Walmart going to do? I don't know.
Well, like, Walmart's already, last season they had already banned RVs parking.
Okay, I don't know. Maybe church, like, I don't know. I have no idea what anybody else is going to do.
Yeah, but there might be some churches that are like, yeah, you can still pay us to come park here.
There might be. You got to come to our church service, though. No, but it's like, you know, if you try to go up on campus, they're going to tell you to go away. And they're already telling people, like, no, we won't allow any tents or any kind of structures, you know, on campus. Like they're even saying they're going to put up screens to make sure that nobody can see the field from any of the viewing spots that we all know exist. So they're trying, you know, like you want to go up on the library. Okay. Good luck looking over this, you know, 10-foot black screen. So not the library is any good anymore anyway, really, with the,
with the fob.
But
there's not many places anymore
because
of the large structures that are now.
The stairway next to the the Cub next to the Fob, that's definitely still a
spot. They could pretty easily, even without a screen, block people off from going down that stairway.
Yeah. Yep, that's true.
Like just for the, you know, 4 hours during the game or whatever. I don't know.
But here's the other thing. Like it's gonna be fucking cold.
And also it's not that good of a view.
No.
Like you're gonna have a way better viewing experience on TV.
Yeah. And if you're really that fired up about it,
and they're not gonna hear you.
Just have a party with your friends and, you know, whatever. Like, I don't know. I mean, I'm seriously, depending on what the weather's like, I mean, I may have a few people over, maybe we put a TV outside, like, you know, and just, you know, we can all hang out and watch the game. And I mean, I don't know, like there's ways to do this without going to Pullman. And I really hope that, you know, so the school said they were going to come up with some sort of like plan for people to still feel connected, but stay home. You know, I hope that that plan involves, you know, some way to support the local businesses. You know, 'cause there are a lot of people, I've heard from a lot of people. Now who knows when it comes time to, you know, put your money where your mouth is, if people will actually follow through with this, but there are people who said, you know, hey, like I have a certain amount of money I spend in Pullman every year and I might as well spend it still, you know?
Well, yeah. So. And WSU was asking like for donations in that amount, like to the CAF, but like,
but that's
okay,
not,
we can support the CAF, but
that's not helping
that
the Cougar,
help
Valhalla
Cougar country.
Or,
and
yeah.
See, like, you know, the thing about like the Coug, I've bought gift cards from them. Like, I don't feel that bad. Like they have a very easy service where you can buy like $50 gift card from them. Like, yeah. So I feel like I can support them, but there's other places in Pullman that you can't as easily do that. Now, the people at, College Hill, and the Coug store were selling, mask, gift card combos for any business in Pullman, essentially. So even the ones like Cougar Country and stuff that you can't buy them online and have them shipped to you. I don't know if they're still doing that. If you find like Tony Poston on Twitter, I think you could probably ask him. But yeah, otherwise, like, and I was thinking, you know, just asking people I know that live in Pullman to just go buy some gift cards and
right. And
send them to me. So yeah, it'd be good if WSU offered that, because honestly, like, if those businesses aren't there, those weekends in Pullman lose some of their, appeal. Like if you're not getting that nostalgic burger or that nostalgic calzone or whatever, like maybe some, especially to the people that go to like the one homecoming and stuff, like it's not the same. Like, and plus, the students, it was nice to have those places when we were there. But obviously they need that revenue from the football weekends, and they're not getting that. Yeah. So I understand if you're like, oh, I need to go to Pullman and support them, but just be smart about it, like you can definitely, the hotels are open, but if you're going to do that, just watch the game in your room.
Yeah.
Like just, it's fine. Go get some takeout from wherever and watch the game in your room. And then you've supported the hotel and you've supported the restaurant, you did your job, and
I mean, the Cub is going to be closed. Like everything on campus is going to be closed. You probably could get into my office, but that place is not that big. Like it's
It's going to be 50% capacity.
And it's going to be a 50% capacity. So good luck with that. Like, I don't know, man.
Same with the Coug.
Just freaking stay home. Your house is warm. Your TV is probably big. Your beer is cold and a lot cheaper. Just stay home, man. Just stay home. It's okay. Nobody's going to think less of you as a fan. Besides, by the way, not to besmirch the good name of diehard Cougs, but like how many of those people do you think are really actually going to follow through with what they say they're going to do?
I don't know. Like, I think some of them will.
You think so?
Yeah. I think so, for some of them, the appeal is that they're like, usually the restriction is that if you're not a season ticket holder and you're used to planning a year in advance for this shit, like it's really hard to find hotels. And that's, if you're true. Not, and if you're not a season ticket holder and you already know how much this costs and you've just accepted it, like you've accepted that the Holiday Inn or the Quality Inn is $300 a night or whatever. Yeah. Like if you just like, you've filed that away in your brain as something that you're good with, it's easier. But like for the people that don't always go, it's probably a little more appealing. You can get the hotel at their normal rate, which is usually like less than $100 a night. And you can still go to Pullman and, you're still not like, I mean, it'd be like going to Pullman in any other like non-football weekend. So I don't, like, I guess people do that and it's fine. Like I always want to do that. I just never do because I go so much for football, but I get the appeal of going to Pullman, but like, you're not going to get a game day experience in any way. Like right. If you're expecting, you're not going to tailgate, like none of that's going to happen. So if you're like going to like, they're expecting to like get this experience, you're not going to go to the bookie. I assume they're just going to shut that down.
Yeah.
Like, and like, so you're not going to do that.
Well,
you're
the
not,
Cub's going to be closed. So the
like
bookie
Crimson and Gray
closed.
Might be open, like you're not going to get the walking around campus. I guess you can walk around campus. I don't know. But like, it's just not going to be the same, man. It's not going to be the same kind of festive atmosphere. Nope. You're not going to be able to walk around with a beer like it's fucking New Orleans, like nope. You can on a normal Cougar football Saturday. It's just not the same experience. So if that's what you're chasing, you're not going to find it.
No.
But just if you must go, just know that it's not going to be the same thing.
Yeah, and it's they even said they were going to sort of step up patrols of off-campus parties too, like. Like they are serious about trying. Well,
Pullman police have said that.
Yeah, so they're serious about trying to make sure that everybody's responsible. And by the way, let's not lose sight of the fact that Whitman County is a freaking hotspot for COVID. So if you're coming into Pullman from somewhere else, you're kind of walking right into a I don't know, a bomb. Like I don't know how you'd describe it, but. You're walking into something not good, and even if you don't get sick, you could very easily carry it back to somebody else. And maybe it's a good idea just to stay home.
Yeah, yeah, they're just in Whitman County. They've I think it's maybe slowed down a bit for them. Yeah, maybe
they're still in the high. I looked this morning while I was writing my story. They're still in the high transmission area. Like, it's well over whatever the high threshold is. So
that's what I'm saying. If you must go to Pullman, stay in your hotel room.
Yes.
If and you must. Get takeout from your favorite restaurant and have that experience.
Yeah, boy, that sounds like fun.
Yeah, I guess I've never had a burger, like chicken strips from the Cougar, like while watching a Cougar football game, because I would have just been, well, that I guess during not a home game.
That would be a new experience.
Yeah, the weirdest thing that sticks with me is what one of the diehard Cougs ones is they were going to Pullman to cheer on the Cougs. I'm like, you're not doing that.
Right. You're not cheering.
Like, that's
on the
not
Cougs.
Going to happen. I'm sorry.
Yeah, like, that is not what you're doing.
You think you're going to show up and they're like, okay, you can come in the stadium. We changed our mind. Like, no, that's not going to happen.
Well, like even Schultz, you know, does what I think, you know, good leaders do, which is lead by example. And he's saying, like, I'm even not going to watch the game in the stadium.
Yeah, because he could definitely go sit in his president's suite.
Yeah, I mean, he could definitely sit in the president's suite and not have any problem with anybody and watch the game. But he's not going to. He's, like I said, you know, good leaders lead by example. And he's like, yeah, I'll be at home watching the game at home from the president's mansion.
It's a very nice home.
Yeah, it is a nice home. It's right up there on the hill.
And he can easily get to go from the Cougar Valhalla or whatever.
Very easily. Very, very easily. So, yeah. So stay home. Let's see. What else? Okay. So who's going to be playing quarterback when they open that game? What do you think?
I mean, I'm going to go with Cammon, but that's primarily because he's the oldest.
Yeah. I mean, really... look, after the first scrimmage, it seems like that's the direction we're heading.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I mean, you can only read so much into coaches.
And how can you resist that lefty?
Yeah. I mean, the things, we always like lefties, man.
That's just going to fuck with the defense.
We love the left-handed.
The left-handed people. I don't love all the left. Let's not go there.
That is true. Like, although some things that are left-handed maybe aren't as left-handed as they like to make it sound, but
yeah, you know,
that's another conversation. Anyway, yeah, like the scrimmage on Saturday, it seems like you know, the things that Rolovich said were kind of pointing toward Cooper. Sounds like Delora had a good day as well. Cruz, the stats were not kind to him, and Rolovich didn't really do anything to make it sound like he was better than his stats. So for whatever that's worth. And some people were, I think, you know, his initial comments on Cooper were, well, you know, he's got kind of a, you know, he's a quieter leader and da 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 da. And people kind of took that to mean, oh, he's criticizing him, which he might have been. But, you know, I think we've said this before on the podcast, and we'll say it again, that when coaches talk, they're not talking to you. They're not talking to me. They're talking to their players. And if Rolovich is saying, like, yeah, you know, Cooper's kind of got his own leadership style, he's a little quiet, and that's okay, but, you know, da da da. I mean, what he's really saying to Cooper is, man, I need you to be more vocal, is what he's saying. Like, and he's not talking to you. He's not talking to me. He's talking to Cooper.
Yeah.
So,
and it just seemed like Cooper was that type of kid from the get go.
Yep. Yep. So
he's definitely no Gardner Minshew.
No, nobody is.
So he's more of a Luke Falk.
Yeah. I think he's a little higher on the, so if we were talking, if this
on
is like
the
a
engagement scale,
yeah, if this is like an engagement continuum. Like, he's a little farther. Like, if Luke Falk's on one end, right, and then Gardner Minshew's on the other end, he's probably closer to Falk than Minshew, but I don't think he's all the way to Falk. So, seems like a really likable kid. I've only been around him a couple times.
Does he still have the mane?
No, he does not. Oh. No, he cut well, that. He definitely.
It's not my
that.
Favorite anymore. Though.
Yeah, I know, right. Definitely cut that. I would not be surprised if I think signs are pointing toward him being the starter, which I love. I think that's great. I don't have any. I mean, I feel like all three of the guys who are there are talented, you know, based off of everything we know about them.
Yeah,
so,
the true freshman would be terrifying.
Yeah, I'd be that was the only outcome. I think I'm sure we talked about this too. Like that's the only outcome that would have surprised me. It would be if he had been named the starter, because with the short season, like, I don't know, man. That just doesn't make a lot of sense. So, to pick a guy who's so inexperienced, but not that Cooper's any more experienced, but
I mean, he's at least, you know, been in the weight room for a couple, for 3 years at this point. So,
yeah. And he's older and he's got a rapport with the players. And I mean, let's not forget, you know, the offense is bringing most of the offense back. I mean, obviously the outside receivers are different, but you know, most of the line is
bringing a lot of good players who have been here for multiple years.
Yeah. So I think there's something to be said with the rapport that he might have there. So,
yeah. Which Gunner, you know, Gunner's been around for a couple of years at this point too. So he may have that as well. As you were talking about, we were talking before we recorded, you know, Gunner didn't seem to get the highest praise from the last scrimmage, but hey, you know, I think you said this on our last podcast. It was very clear when Gardner Minshew was going to win the job. And it's not that clear now. Also, Gardner Minshew had played college football games before, and none of these guys have. Like I said before, with the exception of Heckman, but he doesn't seem in the race at all.
No, he's been moved to defense now, so he's not even, he's definitely not in the race. They do have one other walk on, but
yeah, what was it? Where were they putting him in the? I can't remember, but yeah, they're moving him to defense. As you always do, you know, our second quarterback moved to defense in recent memory. So I don't know, man. I just hope whoever is picked is good, because we need them to be good. Because I wasn't feeling great about the comments Rollo had about the defense today or yesterday.
I guess. I would say that, you know, one of the interesting things about Rolovich is he's, again, even if he's not talking to you and me, he's definitely willing to actually say some things, which is completely the opposite of what we've had for 8 years. Like Leach was like a walking magic eight ball, right? Where it was like, you know, you could shake it and the same like five phrases would come out of his mouth one way or another. Like, you know. Yeah, I thought we, you know, had a good practice. Thought we played hard, you know. I thought we, what were some of the other things he said about defense? Yeah, clear his throat and sniff, you know. And he would talk about, you know, running to the ball, and you know, I thought our effort was good. You always talk about effort, right? So I thought our effort was good. And
well, you could also tell he didn't really pay that much attention to the defense, didn't really care that much.
There's a little bit of that too.
Like if you were forcing him to talk about it, he would.
We just need to get a little bit better tomorrow. You know, we need to work on getting better. We need to get better. You know, and I'm not, by the way, I hope people don't take that as a criticism. It's not like every coach does that. It's not, you know, whatever. But Rolovich seems to actually like say something when he talks, which is, I mean, I don't know. It's hard to remember. I've tried to block it out. Did Paul Wolf say things when he talked? Cause we've got 8 years of listening to Leach say nothing.
I don't remember. When Mike Price was coach,
I know he used to say nothing, cause I used to interview him and
I feel like Paul Wolf was like an excuse factory, right? Like,
that is true. Yeah. Or a little different circumstance.
Or he would say something like, the other team was really good. Like, you love to say that. Like, the other team was really good. That's the best team we've seen all year.
That's the best team we've seen all year.
The 3-9 Oregon State Beavers that we just got whooped by was the best team I've seen all year.
Well, and then he would also say, I remember this too. He would say, that's really the best they've played all year. He would say that one. And I'm like, the other coach! Team. There's a
weird
reason why.
Yeah. How come every time they play WSU, it's their best game? That's so weird.
It's amazing. It's amazing coincidence. So Rolovich has said things about, you know, he's proud of the defenses, basically their resolve. You know, I'm trying to remember exactly how he said it, but basically he said, you know, they're not making plays all over the field, but they're resilient and they make big plays when at big moments and all this stuff. And I'm like, yeah, all that's telling me is they suck right now. Like that's,
yeah. You like know, if you think that the Seahawks defense right now,
yeah.
Like I mean, they've been making big plays at big moments, But man, but if they were a lot better, they wouldn't have to make those plays at big moments.
He's, you know, like it sounds to me again, if we assume the coach is talking to his players and not to you, it sounds like he's trying to encourage a unit that's getting their ass kicked up and down the field by an offense that still doesn't really know what it's doing. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be a roller coaster.
Well, yeah. And, you know, as we talked about earlier, like it's the, you hope the defense is better, and then you held out this like little bit of hope that like they would get a lot better just because like the coaching is that much better. But it's still the same guys.
Yeah.
And they're also learning a new system. It's like expecting them to suddenly be, you know, I think I can't remember what a player said last week or the week before. I said, well, we're gonna shut down people. Like we're gonna I'm glad that you think that.
That was Jihad Woods.
Yeah, and
I'm glad that's what you think.
I'm glad that's what you feel. I will believe it when I see it. I saw what you guys did last year. You didn't get any difference makers coming into the program. I'll have to see it when I believe it. I hope that Dickert is that difference maker. And they do. I mean, I would expect them to improve just because there's not a lot of room to go the other way. Although as going back to the Wolf era again, I believe you wrote an article after the Hawaii Seattle game.
Oh God.
That said there is no bottom. So maybe there is limitless the other way, but
I was so pissed after that game too. I was just, oh my God. Oh my God. Like that game, I'd forgotten about that game too. And I remember that was the game where I kind of thought, all right, here we go. Like the shit's behind us. All right, time to turn it around. And then Hawaii just comes out and fucking murders us. Like just completely outclasses us. And that was the point at which I was like, all right, this is fucked up. I'm done. That was the point at which I quit on Paul Wolf. I was just like, I knew at that point it was over. And somewhere in the back of my mind, I kept writing things that were optimistic because we had to, in order to survive this. I mean, I don't know how many people who listen to this podcast have been around since the site started. I can't imagine it's that many because we've been around a long time now. We're 800 years old in internet years, right? We've been around
You know what I just realized?
Yeah.
What year was that? Was that 2010?
The Hawaii game?
Yeah.
I think it was the third year. Yeah, 2010. I think so.
So Rolo would have been their offensive coordinator then.
He might have been. Are you sure?
He either was. So if it was the year before.
Okay, I'm going to
look
this up.
He was a quarterback coach. So in 2009, he was a quarterback coach. In 2010, he was offensive coordinator. So it just depends what year it was.
Okay, so I'm looking. Hold on. Let me look. This is great radio. Okay, it was not 2010. Maybe it was 2009. Maybe it was the second season.
I want to say, oh yeah, 2008 was the year that they went after the Apple Cup and went out there. So I think 2009. So he was their quarterback.
2009.
So he was their quarterbacks coach at that time.
Okay. And they just
Rolo was there.
Shredded us. Oh my God. Like I said,
Rolo saw us at our worst and was like, "Yeah, I'll go there. I'll coach there."
I mean, I remember 2008, and I went to the Oregon game in 2008 in Pullman. And
I did too. Yeah, it was 69-14. Only because we scored a touchdown at the last second.
I mean, I just remember
63-14, something like that. Whatever. They were all 60 to something back then.
Thinking oh my God, this is not possible. I can't believe this. And I remember how shocked I was by how bad we were.
And that was on the backs of already having lost 66-3 and 59-0 and
you're just it'll be okay. They'll figure it out. It'll be all right. And then no. And so then, 2009 rolls around and I'm thinking, okay, it was just a 1-year blip. We're good, right? Line gets a little better, everybody gets a little better. We got Jeff Toole, right? So this will be cool. He should play at some point. And then no, it just, and then I go to the Hawaii game and part of it is it's such a damn effort for me to get up to Seattle for a game and take my whole family. Like it's not easy to take a family of five up to Seattle for a game from where I live. Right. So it's like, it's a bit of an effort. And then to get there and have them just not just get destroyed, but it felt like, and I know this is probably unfair, but it felt like the effort was terrible. Like, it just felt like they had no clue what they were doing. They didn't really care. And I'm sure they did, but it felt like they didn't. And it was like, I was losing. If you ever ask Sarah about that game, like, I was losing my mind. And I was like,
I remember chatting with you during the game. It's just like, you were.
That definitely was the point so at which mad. My brain realized that this is a disaster.
You know, I was living in Nashville. It wasn't on TV for me. To me, I was like, oh, they're losing again, whatever.
And then the next week was the SMU pull that shit out of your ass.
The only reason that they did not go 0-12 that year.
And so after they win that, so they lose by three touchdowns almost.
Because they literally were not close in any other game. Yeah. Like
they beat SMU thanks to a CJ Mizell interception, right?
Well, there was multiple, I think, pick sixes.
Alex Hoffman Ellis had one too.
And that's how they came back. And then they won in overtime because I think Bo Levi threw another pick.
Yep.
Bo Levi Mitchell, famous. Yep. One of the all-time Cougs, Levi Mitchell.
Yeah, yeah. And then after that, it was 27-6, a loss to USC.
Dude, look at that attendance for the Oregon State game, dude. 16,000.
Oh.
I've been to some, like, even in our good years, some, like, poorly attended, like, relatively poorly attended because, like, the weather is shitty, but never that. 16,000. Like, that's the recorded paid attendance, which means there was not that many people there.
No. They had games where so in the Pac-12 games, they scored 6 points, 6 points, 14 points, 17 points, 14 points, 7, 7, 10, and 0.
How did we wrote about the team? Like we had to write every week about that team. Look at these scores. How the hell could anyone take this team seriously enough to write up multiple articles about them every week? Write previews and recaps like of this team. Like they had no shot. Like they didn't really have a shot against SMU. They just got incredibly lucky. Like,
I was still young. That was the thing. You and I were still young.
Oh, I was super young.
You know, that was the part of it. So I was, you know, 30 or whatever at the time. So
I was 24.
That definitely helped because I was still dumb enough to invest my time in that garbage. And then, you know, part of it was too, like back then we didn't have all the other outlets that we do now for our thoughts and our feelings. And so like, for example, like Twitter was still extreme. If it was even around, it was still extremely fledgling at that point.
Yeah, I think I joined Twitter in 2009.
Yeah, so
like you know, I joined March 2009. It says right on my profile.
So the idea of you know posting all your thoughts to Twitter just kind of wasn't a thing yet.
We had our game
threads. Yeah, and we had our massive game threads. We didn't have all the talk we do on Slack, right? You know, back then we had an email thread, but those were unwieldy and difficult. So we would just have our conversations on the website, you know, so writing was the catharsis, right? Cause we didn't have each other to yell at in these other forums like Twitter and Slack. So, I think that's a huge part of how we survived. And also basketball was okay at that point. Right. So if basketball's good, you know, then
we had Klay Thompson at this point.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, 2009, we're heading into the 2009, 2010 season. Ken Bone's first season. We got Klay Thompson. We're feeling pretty good.
Oh, by the way, that Hawaii team that spanked us.
Yes.
Went on to lose their next six games.
Yes. I do remember they had a kick-ass receiver who, and I'm trying to remember his name. So I'm looking right now. Greg Salas, that was the guy.
Yeah, Greg Salas.
Yeah, he was very good. Doesn't excuse anything, but I do remember that he tore us up.
Yeah, so probably best game of his life.
It wasn't. He got a cup of tea in the NFL.
No, I'm just kidding. Oh, okay. Paul Wolf. Like, probably, he's never played better than that.
Yeah, sorry.
Hawaii had never played better than they did that day.
I completely missed the joke.
And that was one of our closest games of the year.
Greg Salas, are you ready for this? Greg Salas had seven catches for 195 yards.
They're probably all like, he probably like wasn't even touched on most of those
he
catches
wasn't
too.
He wasn't. That was the thing I remember. Like, dudes were just running around totally free, like nobody getting in their way. Fuck. Paul Wolf still. Ugh.
Hey, well, we did have a podcast back then. It was terrible.
But... We did. It was bad.
Shout out if you listened to that one
yeah.
back then on Podbean.
Yeah,
Podbean. Recorded live.
Yeah.
Oh, or Talk, God. Was it Talk? We had Podbean in a different one. Talk
yeah,
something.
We did. I don't remember the name of that.
I remember it would say Recorded Live when
yeah,
we started.
It did. Wasn't that like Blog Talk? Like, wasn't that what that was?
Blog Talk,
maybe. Blog Talk
yeah.
Radio?
Recorded yeah.
Recorded Live.
We are
Recorded Live.
I'm not saying I'm like a talented host at this point, but I had not much juice back then.
Nope. That was a thing for sure. That was back when I was trying to like be the podcast guy, and
yeah,
I started to realize pretty quickly like the things that I was good at and not good at. I mean, look, back at that time, I was starting to try to do like videos and like.
I remember those breakdown videos.
Let me break down. Now that was actually a little bit later. That was like
2012,
2013 or so when. Leach was around, and because the air raid's like one of those things where if you just like spend some time learning, like you
yeah.
can totally wrap.
I mean,
your
there's
brain
yeah,
around.
There's six plays, so you
right.
just, you can figure it out.
So I, you know, I was able to figure some stuff out. The you know, and the run and shoot's not that different either. It's a little harder to identify for the layperson when you're watching it because so much of it is you know option routes and stuff where you know the receivers are just sort of like not really freelancing, but kind of freelancing, you know. So. A little bit different, but yeah, like, you know, the air raid was pretty darn accessible. So I'm like, yeah, I can break this down. And then after a little while of doing that, I was like, this is a very bad idea for me. Cause you know what I was doing? Okay. So here's how it would go. I would see a play that I thought was interesting and I'd be like, okay, I think I want to break this down. And then I would send messages to Brian Anderson and Jesse Cassino
and Brian Floyd
and be like, okay, so this is what I think I'm seeing. And they're like, no, you're not actually seeing that. You're actually seeing this. And I'm like, oh, okay. And it just kind of would be like that. And basically it would just, I would basically be like a ghost writer. It's not really a ghost writer because I was making videos, but like a ghost video writer for Brian and Jesse yeah. who weren't.
Well, they wanting, would be your ghost writers.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Like, yeah. Like I was the one making the video. So I was like,
yeah,
you know, like, look at. But really, I'm just channeling Brian and Jesse because, yeah, anyway. Yeah, that's why that didn't last very long because, yeah, our pivot to video was short-lived.
Thanks, Facebook.
Yeah, jerks.
Which, in case you don't know, Facebook lied about their video impressions and stuff.
Yeah.
And all these companies that pivoted to video was just a big farce, but I don't know.
Lots
SB
of
Nation
good people lost their jobs and, yeah, you know, were great, unemployed yeah. because Facebook was like, hey, video's good. And everybody
like,
did.
Well, actually, no one's watching your video.
Actually,
sorry.
Never mind. Just kidding.
We
kind of
lied about
these.
Those numbers.
Sorry. Just kidding. And then Mark Zuckerberg gets to sit in front of Congress and go, I regret that.
I regret that.
I regret that. That was unfortunate. Thanks, Mark.
Let me fly out on my personal jet.
As I go to swim in my billions of dollars. Sorry.
I regret it so hard.
I regret that so
much. I regret my billions of dollars.
Absolutely. I regret it. Let's see. All right. So we should finish up. Let's see. We got a couple of recruits. One's a transfer from a junior college, but was at Oklahoma State and a former four-star guy. I don't know. Did you watch his video at all?
No. And
okay.
Hey, Jeff.
Yeah.
I really have to fucking pee, dude.
All like, right. Well, I'll talk while you pee. So, okay. So CJ Moore comes from, I don't know, some junior college. Doesn't really matter. But originally was at Oklahoma State for 2 years. So was there for 2 years, redshirted, and then kind of had a bit part as a redshirt freshman. Goes the JUCO route after that. And to be honest, if you're wondering, like, well, how does a four-star guy leave? Why does a four-star guy leave Oklahoma State? Is there some reason to wonder? So he was kind of stuck behind some upperclassmen guys. And if you're not super familiar with Oklahoma State at this point, if you kind of think of them as a sort of a dynamic spread offense, they are, except that it's very run heavy. And it's definitely kind of more of a traditional, it's kind of a pro style offense, except it operates out of a shotgun. Like it's spread in the sense that they go shotgun all the time, but they go heavy a lot. Tight ends, really physical run game, Chuba Hubbard. Most people know who that is at this point. You know, very talented physical runner. So they, you know, most they're running two wides a lot. In fact, I think I want to say last year they had, I think, two guys who caught over 50 balls and that was it. So definitely not a wide open passing attack going on at Oklahoma State. So not a shock that a guy who was, you know, maybe a former four-star talented guy, maybe stuck behind some upperclassmen, which he was, both those guys who caught all those balls came back. So, you know, you're stuck behind those guys. So he transfers to a junior college. Nick Rolovich lands him, which is really kind of interesting because he's a tall guy. He's 6'5". And we had actually just been having a conversation at Cook Center about tall receivers and the run and shoot and kind of wondering, you know, if maybe there's a little bit of an upper limit to the big guys, the kinds of big guys that WSU can recruit playing in that offense where maybe you need to be a little shiftier. You need to make decisions on the fly, you know, and maybe be a little more slippery. Watching this guy's high school video, he is slippery, and it's kind of crazy because he's, you know, again, he's big, he's 6'5", but he's real long and lanky. He accelerates so smoothly and runs so smoothly. And to be honest, he reminds me a ton of a bigger version of Tavaris Martin. And Tavaris Martin wasn't really a burner, but, you know, you might remember some of the, you know, screen passes that he caught where he'd catch it and then just sort of like make one little slippery move and then boom, he'd accelerate and he'd be gone. And, it, you know, as it turned out, he wasn't really actually that fast of a guy. I mean, you never really know these things until, you know, they measure him at a combine. And of course, he when he went pro, he measured actually really, really slow for an outside receiver. So this guy is actually faster than that, but has very similar kind of body movements. Real, like I said, real shifty, quick acceleration for a guy with long legs. Really interesting prospect. So yeah, like I'm very excited about what he might bring to the offense. So that's a very cool pickup. And then Craig, I think you're back. So we did get one other pickup, and this one is the much more controversial pickup. So we'll see how much we actually want to say about this, which probably isn't a whole lot. But so WSU has added a walk-on to the roster, which is, you know, not unusual. But what's unusual about this one is he's a former four-star guy who also had signed with Stanford. Now his situation is he had his admission revoked to Stanford when Stanford went to investigate an alleged sexual assault that he was a witness to or an apparent witness to. And the records were basically his family and all the other families of the boys involved in the alleged sexual assault basically sued to keep those records sealed and private. And Stanford just kind of went, nah, not really worth the trouble. And they just went ahead and revoked his admission. So he didn't land anywhere else, eventually landed at Wazoo. Many, many things. So his name is Aiden Hector, by the way. Many, many things are unclear about it. So it's unclear how long he's been at the school. It's unclear how long he's been practicing with the team. What we know is that he played in the scrimmage and got a sack. He's a defensive back, so he must have been on some kind of corner blitz or something. So he'd been around long enough to play in a scrimmage and get a sack.
Yep.
So maybe he's been around for longer than anybody's letting on. We don't really know. Maybe they kind of didn't want it out there that he was on the team. I don't know. What I do know is, based on reports, he was not directly involved with the assault, the alleged assault. That doesn't make it okay necessarily. And I don't know that I have much else to say about that. So how about you, Craig?
Yeah, I'm not really comfortable, opining on it. So, Yeah, it's just one of those things where we'll probably never really know everything about it. He is here as a walk-on. So, yeah, it's, you know, he's not getting a scholarship from WSU, at least this year. It was obviously when it first came out, you were like, what the heck? Like, what is this? Like, how right. is WSU getting this four-star kid right. that was a lot? Like, what? And so now you know why. And yeah, I don't know. You know, it's just add it to the list of things that make you uncomfortable, I guess.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I don't think either one of us are pretending that we know what happened, right?
Yeah.
I also think both of us tend to side with alleged victims. I think that's right. a pretty established fact about you and I. You know, we know that something happened that night. Nobody is denying that there was sexual contact. And the only question is whether it was consensual or not. And, you know, the girl is saying it was not consensual. And so at that point, it's like, you know, something happened and it wasn't good. And, you know, I think it's pretty clear that, you know, I would guess that Hector, I'm just guessing, but I would guess that Hector probably wishes he would have done some things differently that evening. At this point, he was 16 at the time. Doesn't excuse the behavior, but also, you know, 16-year-olds, you know, do 16-year-old things. And I guess like my overriding feeling about it and emotion about it is that it sucks. And somebody was hurt. She maintains that she was assaulted. And so regardless of whether a, you know, criminal assault occurred, and the prosecutor determined they could not prosecute the case, regardless of whether a criminal assault occurred, you know, she feels like she was assaulted. So that's enough for me. And so, you know, Aiden, I'm sure, like I said, wishes he did things differently. And, you know, here's to hoping that, you know, it ends up not sort of blowing up in WSU's face. And, you know, I do think, you know, you mentioned he's a walk-on, and we've kind of emphasized that a couple times. And I think that's a really important point. That, you know, regardless of what happened or regardless of whether a crime occurred, certainly Hector has paid some kind of price. Like, I'm not, you know, I think that's worth acknowledging, that, you know, it's a kid who had a scholarship to Stanford that was revoked, and now he's paying his own way at Washington State. So is it enough? I don't know. It's tough to say. These are hard questions. So I just hope it works out for everybody. And, you know, there are no winners here, as usual in these sorts of things. So is there anything else we missed?
Yeah. What a note to end on.
Yeah, that was kind of a bummer. I don't know. Do we have something
as if watching college sports wasn't already a bit of a uncomfortable thing. But yeah. No, I don't know what else is there. We're getting closer and closer to the actual games.
Yeah.
The Big Ten is playing football this weekend.
I would expect we'll have a quarterback name, by the way, by probably the end of this weekend. Rolovich said they were going to start prepping for Oregon State next week, which would mean, you know, he had said earlier that he wanted to make sure and have his starters in place pretty early so they could really truly prepare as much as possible to hit the ground running. So I would not be shocked if we had a quarterback name by the end of the weekend, probably before you and I record again next.
All right.
So that's good, I suppose.
I'm rooting for no one. I just am rooting for them to be good.
Yeah. Whoever it is, don't suck, please. Yeah. Be awesome.
That's all we ask is that you be awesome.
That's all we ask. It's a modest request. Don't suck.
Well, thank you to, and I wasn't there to talk to him, but thank you to Mark Alinsky for
taking
awesome.
The time.
It's awesome.
You're going to love it when you listen to it.
Late at night for him, too. Or,
it is. Yeah, he's kind of a night owl, though.
But, yeah. Truthfully, I can't imagine he sleeps that well. But But yeah, so thank you to him. Again, our United campaign is this week. Coug Center, we have the info for you. Even if you just go straight to ButteBrand.com, they have info. Again, like Jeff said, if you don't want to buy another shirt or a hoodie, if you maybe you already have a couple in the closet, you can just donate straight to Halinski's Cope and just let us know if you do, so we can count it as part of this campaign. You know, let us know, hey, I heard you guys on the podcast and I donated, so just so we can count it as part of the campaign. But
we'd love to add it to the total.
But also, French Terry hoodie, man, I'm stoked for it.
They are pretty sexy.
Yeah,
I got to be honest.
You know, if you don't have the sizing issues that Jeff and I have, just pull the trigger.
If you happen to be an average sized human, unlike an overweight 43-year-old and a really tall 30, what are you now? 36?
35.
Sorry, dude, my bad. But you know,
don't be adding the years ahead of time.
I apologize. My bad.
You know what's funny? I always feel like uncomfortable now. Like, even though my age is many places on the internet, like, yeah. I always feel like uncomfortable. Like, because, you know, there's like very clearly like things people put on Twitter that are like trying to get your security question information. Yeah. Like, what was your first car? And it's like, you used to just be like, oh yeah, my first car was this. But now you're like, why do you want to know what my first car is, that? Dude?
What was your first address? Did you used
what
to
was
live
the street
at
you
blank,
lived
blank,
on?
Blank, blank,
blank? What was the street you lived on first? Like, totally. Why? What kind of conversation is this? I mean, first car is a normal conversation. Like, I've had that conversation many times. But, you know, usually it's with your friends and they're like, oh, sweet, I got your bank account security questions. I'm good now. Not that those are, like, very useful anymore. I feel like you don't see those as much anymore.
Not
security
as much.
Questions.
Not as much. But if it not has anything to do with, you know, like your credit report, that's where they do ask you those. Because they're like, yeah, like, did you used to live at blank street? Like, yeah. Anyway. All right, man. Follow us, tweet us, review us, rate us, all that good stuff.
Yeah, we got a nice email from shit. Oh, I can't remember. John, I think.
John. His name was John.
Yeah, John.
And he worked at the Paul Wolf Company.
He works. Sorry to dox you, John.
I about died when I read that.
Oh my God, that was awesome.
That was fantastic. He says he listens all the way to the end of the show, too, which means he's going
so
to hear
he's
this.
He's here this right now, dude. Yeah, so, I appreciate
hi, John.
The nice words.
Thanks for writing us, man. Yeah, that was awesome. Yeah, made me laugh.
Yeah.
In all sincerity, like, it was a really nice email, and it made me smile. And that was, like, these days, making me smile is, like, worth its weight in gold. So,
yeah,
not that a smile is any kind of weight, but you know what I mean.
And we haven't gotten an email in months on the podcast. I mean, obviously, we haven't had that many shows, but so yeah, it's podcast versus VS. It's with a VS, not spell out the word versus. Podcast VS everyone at Gmail. So you can send us nice things. You can send us mean things, but we'll probably either be snarky or ignore you.
Yeah, we'll probably talk shit behind your back, just so you know. Yeah,
well, actually, we'll probably talk shit right on the podcast. So.
Yeah, we might do that too. Like the one we got that said we should stop talking about politics. After we like spent like 1 minute talking about politics.
Yeah. Or, you know, I don't know, man.
I don't even remember what that was, but it was funny.
Yeah. Well, we've gotten a few of those.
yeah. All right.
Well, again,
our usual graceful ending.
Yeah. buy United shit.
Yeah.
Or else.
Or
go Cougs.
Go Cougs, Craig. Black Lives Matter.
Black Lives Matter.